somewhat of a personal story, and it was one where, if I look back, when I was sitting more than 20 years ago in vet school, thinking that I was going to become an avian veterinarian or an animal behaviorist, an ethologist. And one of these fateful days, we had someone from the state health office come over and talk about an interesting project looking at mercury in some of our pristine waterways, looking at controls, and lo and behold, found that in our pristine waterways, they had higher levels of mercury deposition there than the cases. And I thought, wow, this is fascinating, really neat stuff. This environmental epidemiologist was so fascinating to me. I talked to him after class, and I said, what kind of things would you have for a veterinarian? And that sort of launched my career. I wasn't sitting in environmental health class thinking that this was it for me. This was sort of a fall into the position. How many of you fell into environmental health? And how many knew that this was your life's calling? All right, Cliff. And so I had a fabulous time at the state health office as an intern, and worked on some psittacosis projects, and then stayed, loved it. Actually worked in AIDS surveillance for a number of years, and just the horizons were huge. And I always found working with environmental health directors, though, because they found, oh, there's a veterinarian up at the state, and they'd ask you bizarre, neat, fun questions that we could write volumes. Every one of you can write volumes of the fun stuff that you've been working on. And when I was lucky enough to get the position as division director in 2003, I came from being, as Sarah mentioned, the state public health veterinarian, where instantly I knew if I had a question about a veterinary public health issue, I could just get on a phone with any one of my colleagues where there is a vet in the state, and we could chat and see what they're doing and how I could learn from them. And the first question I asked as a state director of environmental health is, who can I call besides CDC? For such a network kind of information, and there sort of wasn't anybody. So at the 2003 CDC meeting that Dick Jackson pulled together for environmental health, which was wonderful, just listening to William McDonough's speech was worth the price of admission. How many of you all had a chance to go to that one? Just a couple of you. I'm sorry. But I thought, well, maybe this is a place where we can get some EH directors from states together. And so we tried, and we got about five, and we, you know, all said, yeah, this is something we need to do. And I was also at this meeting told, go see Sharonda Buchanan, because she was interested in starting a state EH directors kind of concept as well, partly because when CDC wanted to spread its wings, and as Rob now, who's taken her place, mentioned, this was something that they see as we were their customers. And so I got this sort of preliminary list from her, and at the same time, it was a neat confluence. We also found out that ASTHO was interested in looking at state EH directors as well. So, I think I gave Jim Blumenstock a honorary doctorship there, but, you know, what the heck, it's fun to pass out. So when eFilly came about, I thought, being new in my position, what a great opportunity to actually learn what the heck I'm supposed to be doing. And also at that 2003 CDC meeting was the Emerging Leaders Initiative, which was fabulous, another opportunity that CDC put together with wonderful mentors at that moment. And so it sort of just snowballed a bit there. And so I was thinking, one of the fun things about eFilly is that they don't give you, and I don't know if this was maybe someone thought perhaps one of the questions earlier suggested that there's a list of problems that you go fix. No, you come to eFilly with a problem that you want to address, and which is a good thing, because then it just ensures that you'd be passionate about what your project is, so you'd follow through with it. And mine certainly was building on what CDC was interested in and ASTHO was interested in at the time. Megan Latshaw also pulled together, and Amanda Raziano pulled together some state EH directors as well, and thought, what are our problems? What are the things that we want to address first and foremost? How do we prioritize with the whole breadth of environmental health stuff going on? And in looking at this concept, the question for us was, what results do we really want? And knowing that there are other associations that had environmental health in the name, knowing that there were other priorities that were being set out there, what could we get from pulling together a state EH directors group? And really, to us, it's a unified EH body so that we can look at a sharing of ideas, but also priority setting and standardization along these common issues. And, you know, looking through the EPHILI, yeah, that's my house right there in Florida. Looking at EPHILI, not really. As Nicole mentioned, a large part of our time was spent on the systems thinking, which was great training because it's, okay, most people come in there and they set out their problem and they kind of have an idea what their answers are. And the systems thinking forces you to think through, well, who might not like that and why hasn't this problem, if it's such a great problem and you have the answer, already been solved? So that is definitely worth looking through. And part of the issue here, which seems to me, because mine was sort of a softball project, I'll admit it. You know, I thought it wasn't as technically proficient as some of these others and ones that you've heard. But, thinking through this, well, why would not there be an interest in state EH directors? Probably because of time limitations, and there's already too many organizations to join and you know, on and on about management. But we thought that we could sell this because these best management practices, having this brain trust throughout the nation was important, providing a cohesive approach to some of our issues. If we have challenging situations, perhaps we can call on each other and decide to collectively a best way to look through this. So we thought the benefits certainly would be available. And one of the other things in an earlier ask, though, combination of states was a simple truth that perhaps EH didn't register on the priority list of some of our state health offices. And so that in and of itself was a reason for us to kind of work through ASTHO. And in fact, we are not a separate organization, but we are working through ASTHO and lucky to have Amanda do all the heavy lifting for us. You know, and here, if you wanted to know how to pitch horseshoes in Texas, you know, just call these guys. So we thought, again, some of the interventions that would be available would be mutual aid issues. And at the time, Florida was fresh from coming through our hurricanes. And we really appreciated, after so many hurricanes, our folks were getting a little bit tired. So it was nice to have some of the states like Kentucky and Oklahoma come down and send people to help us, just because physically folks were exhausted. And as I mentioned, working through ASTHO was a strategic plan, because we do want to raise and elevate these issues that environmental health is working on to the state health officers to get that buy-in from our bosses. And that is critical, and I think that's working. And really, we have launched, and we do have the state EH directors. We've got some operational guidance, and we're working on the first steps of getting to know each other, and now are looking at developing our strategic plans and our priority settings. One of the things, because one size does not fit all, that we found in doing a census of the state's EH programs, and Walt Combs and Amanda put together a very nice project where we surveyed the states, and the take-home message is, if you've seen one state EH program, you've seen one state EH program. We are vastly different. Nevertheless, there are programs that we have in common, and we can call upon each other when we do have those commonalities. So that was a first issue, again, getting to know each other, and also marketing EH with our partners, with NEHA, with CDC, with ECOS, with you name it, anybody who has an interest. We all want to get to the same place, which is elevating EH issues, and so there's great opportunity there. And Cliff Mitchell is working with a group in indoor air standards and providing models that way, which is really exciting. Our first meeting last year in New Orleans in the spring, we focused in on that as a major issue. And also are looking at and working with the policy committee of ASTHO in climate change issues. And I really believe that the main issues for me personally with eFilly being in the first class was the networking capability and the use of this group. And also, since there were state and local, and again, I'm from a state, it was neat hearing other local county EH folks talk about their states in not so nice of terms. So I can perhaps take that home and figure out, well, I mean, it wasn't all bad, but it was, you know, some lessons learned about how the locals perhaps won't give you their honest opinions, and encouraging that communication from local to state. So that was another sort of ancillary take-home that I had gotten. But the main thing of the networking was critical. How many of you all, I'm just kind of curious, feel like you can either pick up a phone or email colleagues and get good EH support? A few of you. The ones who were in eFilly and the state EH directors are the ones who raised their hands. So I think we've got a lot of job to do with our networking capabilities, because that's the way it's going to have to be, especially with our cutbacks and so forth. Thank you. Sarah suggested I talk about how we've used our listserv for some of the examples, and we've had some water issues that have come up. We've got one actually that's just going along with water shortages and how EH is trying to deal with those. We've had numerous questions about very specific legislation that's coming up. And it's nice to have Doug Farquhar, too, among our affiliates, I would say, because we can ask him what other states are doing legislatively, and so we've kind of built on those. Was there a question in the back? You know, that's a great question. In fact, one of our groups with eFilly from Oklahoma, their project, because in that particular state, unfortunately, in my view, but their environmental health programs were split among, I don't know, seven agencies, something crazy like that. And so their project was, how do we pull these folks together so they're leaning in the same direction? And how do we get away from strictly enforcement and more into the education and more into building it right or designing it right to begin with? And again, one size fits once. It really depends on the state that you're coming from that way. But I think you're absolutely right in terms of, you know, how do you address and frame the question. And as Rob had in his last slide, environmental health is what we do every day. It touches everyone's life every day. The water you drink, the food you eat, the air you breathe, that usually gets the legislators. That good little five-second hallway conversation about, oh, man, you can't do without us. We're survival stuff here. This is... Depends who your audience is, maybe is a good way to answer that question. Okay. Thank you.
Now in the open question time for any of the speakers, and Rob might want to speak to that last one too, as the various hats you've had. He's been at local, state, and now at CDC of what is environmental public health. So do you want to talk about that?
I think I touched on it in answer to the question about environmental protection, environmental health. I really see those as combined, and it's really a false split of government functions. And unfortunately, a lot of the programs around the country have gone to regulatory roles. Essential service number 6 of the 10 essential public health services, and we really need to broaden our horizons. And I think the work that Sarah and Pat are doing on the performance standards will help us look at ourselves and say, are we really doing the job of meeting what the community is asking us to do, both at the local and the state level? And once we start to ask ourselves honest those questions and give honest answers, And I think that drives us to try and fill those gaps as far as working with the communities, listening to them, and beginning to solve some of these issues together. So I'm really hopeful that we can pull this all this together. We are working very much more closely with now at the CDC level with EPA, and I think there are some possibilities there for the future that can really improve environmental health, environmental protection practice in this country.
More questions? Yes.
Cliff. Excellent comment. And good for follow-up next year. Yeah. That's great food for thought for next year, is maybe we can put together a session with you guys involved and some others to talk about the conversations that are going on. I agree, as someone who is a local environmental health director, that the practical application of research is very difficult. It's hard to access it, and then it's hard to interpret it. People just don't have the training or the skills and sometimes the time, and maybe one area we can support people on is helping to make that connection, as well as making it at the federal level. I wanted to mention some resources that CDC is trying very hard to make available along the same line of how do we access information. And if you go to that website of NCEH/EHSB, you'll find there are a number of things. First, you'll find Carl Osaki's module. It's a self-training module on the 10 essential environmental health services, and it can take you and your staff can use it to walk through, remind yourself what the 10 are for your agency. You'll also find the core competencies, and you'll find the draft environmental health performance standards that some people have mentioned. And as you
go through those standards. There's also an instruction on how to use it. The whole NEHA training module, the train 1.5 day training that we put on at NEHA, is online in little bite-sized modules, so you or your staff could run through it and take it and do the self-assessment of your agency. The draft standards are on there, the assessment tools on there, and you can identify your gaps and start working on them. The next thing then that was posted was a toolkit for each of the 10 essential services and standards. There are available online tools that already exist for you to improve your surveillance system, to educate the public, to train your workforce. Doug Farquhar is in the audience. He's with the National Conference of State Legislators, and his website is on there for all of the state-level environmental regulations on air, water, food that he was able to locate for the 50 states. So if your state is thinking of developing something, or even your local, those actual regs will be posted on there so you don't have to reinvent things and you can compare. So that toolkit is very helpful. The listserv that Rob Blake mentioned, you can post a question to your colleagues, and anyone who has time and interest will respond to the whole listserv. So if you say, you know, we just got hit with this new thing in the field about what do we do on a new kind of water park. Have any of you ever seen this, and how are we going to regulate it? And people will write back and say, here's the regs we developed. Shortcuts a lot of your time, which we know is of the essence at the local level. So those are very hopeful things. Carl Osaki has also posted a free online training module on how to do evaluation of your programs and how to communicate with the public. So we're building that all the time. It's an excellent resource. NEHA has a very good website, has some definitions of environmental health on it. Also on there is a consortium's work on innovative environmental health workforce practices. This is a consortium of NEHA, NACHO, APHA, and other organizations. We held a competition, if you will, for anyone to send in things they were doing to recruit, educate, or retain their workforce. And then we gave out, we selected winners, and it's an open online nomination. And we have those posted on there. So if you're looking for excellent ways, like Jennifer described, on how to use, to advance your workforce with existing resources, basically. Yes. Great. She's asking if there's any online toolkit for cultural sensitivity or ethical issues on working with communities, and I don't think there's posted one on this website yet, but perhaps some of you know of others, actual modules on that. See, it's a gap. We're kind of making a list of gaps and then trying to locate things, and these resources posted are not just CDC, they're anybody's that we can find, and then we're sticking them in there. Charles Otto is a wonderful webmaster and environmental health genius who happens to run that website and plugs things in all the time, but that's a great point. Yes, Cliff. I think research is one of our weakest links in general. We don't know how to evaluate our programs. We don't know how to evaluate whether if we build capacity and whether we strengthen our workshop, do the people get healthier? That's the long run goal. We don't have good research on the practice end of things, and we need it. If you heard Dr. Gerberding speak yesterday, she's talking about the pressure on outcomes, which we all are under and we should be, because that's the bottom line. So I would like to explore this whole area some more. Well, I invite you to visit with the graduates, the fellows, with Nicole and with Rob, and any other questions, and encourage you to encourage people you know to apply for this institute. And thank you very much. Thanks. A round of applause for all of our speakers.